Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Monday, the 11th of October, President Donna Shalala is with us this hour of the program, and we are making this a pledge-free hour, which is terrific. It doesn't mean that you can't pledge. Phone calls will still be accepted, but we want to get in as much conversation as possible. So remember the pledge number, which is 888-202-2552 or WPR.org, and you can pledge during this hour, but we decided to give you pretty much a full hour. She has a remarkable life, as you know. She has very strong ties to Wisconsin. She was chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison from 1987 to 1993. She was U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, where she served for 8 years, the longest serving Health and Human Services Secretary in the history of this country. She directed the welfare reform process, made health insurance available to millions of children with the CHIP program, raised child immunization rates, led major reforms of the FDA's drug approval process and food safety system. She is now president of the University of Miami. She has held tenured professorships at Columbia University, the City University of New York, and the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She just won a wonderful award. She must be so proud of this. It's the Nelson Mandela Award it's a prize, actually, for health and human rights. And she just recently won that. She also chaired this very long, thorough investigation of nursing in this country. She is chair of a committee that studied nursing and makes the recommendation that nurses with advanced degrees should be able to provide more health care in America. And the report calls for states and also the federal government to remove barriers that restrict what care advanced practice nurses, those with a master's degree, provide. We have so much to talk about with her, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for President Shalala. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. President Shalala, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah. Let's start with the Peace Corps. I'm always amazed how many people who were in the Peace Corps have gone on to these prominent lives of public service. And you were in Iran, of all places, and one of the early volunteers.
I was. You know, when I graduated from college, I was looking for an adventure, and boy, did I get one.
I'll bet you did. And what was Iran like from 62 to 64 when you were there?
Well, I lived in a mud village in southern Iran where we actually worked on an education project and an agricultural project. The young men that were stationed with me were really Aggies who helped improve the use of local materials for a combination of building as well as improving the soil.
And when you look at what's going on in that country right now, what alarms you?
Breaks my heart.
Does it?
Yes, because, you know, it's in the hands of terrorists.
Yeah.
The Iran culture, the culture of Iran, the people of Iran are just magnificent. But their leadership leaves more than something to be desired. You know, there are a lot of return volunteers in Wisconsin. We had this, the University of Wisconsin at Madison is still probably ranks number one in terms of the number of volunteers, young people who go out to the Peace Corps. And Madison had a huge return volunteer organization, so I ran into them all the time when I lived in Wisconsin.
We were just talking last hour about how ideas like that, and I understand that we're in the Royce Federal Building in Milwaukee, and that he had a lot to do with the start of the Peace Corps. How ideas like that, that seem relatively simple, have this huge impact, not only on parts of the world, but also on the people who were part of it.
Well, I think that's the point, that they didn't overreach with the Peace Corps. They didn't pretend that we were going to go out and change the world. What they said was the world was going to change us. And it was a pretty straightforward idea. Send young people who are, many of them in my generation, recent college graduates, off to the developing world. Give them pretty straightforward jobs. Most of us were teachers. And a lot of us taught English. I remember half the secondary school system of Ethiopia was at one point made up of Peace Corps volunteers. And what it did was it made us world citizens.
Yes.
And gave us a much broader view of the world, no matter what we went back and did afterwards.
Right. We have a lot to talk about, so let's hop around. But let's also congratulate you. This must be one of your favorite awards. But to win the 2010 Nelson Mandela Award is pretty special. He certainly is one of my heroes, as he is many. And I would imagine one of yours as well.
He is. And I was just stunned. Some of it was for work I did while I was at Wisconsin, because we trained in land use planning a whole generation of young South Africans before South Africa was free, who would be really needed as the country was freed to change some of the land use policies. And our College of Agriculture did a wonderful job with many of these young people.
Huh. The report, let's go right into healthcare here. You chaired this committee, and it's a report from the Institute of Medicine, sponsored by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Nurses, I'm with you on this, should take on a larger and more independent role in providing healthcare in America. What did you look at? What are your recommendations?
We looked at the role of nurses and how nurses were constrained, given their training, by really political decisions in the states as to what they can do. We looked at it in the context of healthcare reform and pointed out that we were going to need a lot more people in primary care that were very well trained. And much of the work could be done by nurses. Advanced practice nurses who had six-year degrees could absorb a lot of the prevention work, plus chronic care management, palliative care. There are a lot of things that nurses can do that they're really restrained from doing now by state law.
Mm-hmm. And some states are more progressive than others in this regard?
Some are more progressive than others. And it actually doesn't have a lot to do with whether they're Republican or Democratic. One of the most progressive states is New Hampshire. Some of the western states, not California, I should point out, but some of the western states do a much better job in giving nurses the authority to write prescriptions, to take care of the primary care needs of their patients. Now, some of that is because rural areas simply can't attract primary care doctors and the numbers that are needed. And some of it is because of a recognition the states do the training through their great public universities. And if they're trained, they ought to be able to work up to their training. Now, I would say that that's as true of other healthcare professionals as well. They ought to be able to work up to their training.
At the risk of offending some doctors, President Shalala, is this a turf battle? Do doctors not want nurses to have as much authority as they should?
I wouldn't get into motivation, but there's no question that states are spending a lot of money training advanced practice nurses, nurse practitioners, on one hand, and then on the other hand, limiting what they can do with that training. It clearly is a political decision. But it affects pharmacists, it affects physical therapists. I mean, there are battles out there in the politics of healthcare that simply need to be overcome, because we need people that are well-trained to provide these services. But we were very careful to point out that this is about a partnership, a partnership between physicians and nurses and other healthcare professions, if we're going to have an integrated care system and high-quality care. Nor do we believe that nurses can fully substitute for physicians. In some areas, they clearly could free up physicians to do other kinds of things.
The Department of Health and Human Services announced something like over $300 million in grants to strengthen the healthcare workforce, some of those grants going to nursing schools to increase full-time enrollment. How important is that? Is that just a drop in the bucket? What can we do to make sure that the number of people who want to be nurses can receive the education?
Well, it's a good first step. There's no question about it. The nursing schools have huge faculty problems to absorb all the people that want to go into nursing, particularly advanced practice nursing. So helping to train the next generation of faculty members is very important. Wisconsin is a big player, both in Milwaukee as well as, of course, at Madison, in the provision of PhDs in nursing. And these will be the future faculty members.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the health care legislation passed by the Obama administration before we go to the many phone calls that are in line for you, President Shalala. We find it interesting that there are very few Democrats who are running on, I was in favor of health care reform and I believe in it. Senator Feingold is doing that. He may be one of the only senators who is not running away from the issue. Why is it so contentious?
I think because it's been mischaracterized as to what its impact will be on the current health care system. It is not going to run up the costs of individuals who already have good health care. Their costs are going up for a wide variety of reasons, but it cannot be directly attributed to trying to get health care for more people. Certainly that it in itself costs more money, but it was paid for by the Congress through a variety of cuts and new revenues that were identified. And I think a part of the problem is because its impact hasn't been felt yet. Yes, you know, people can cover their kids up to 26 in their existing health care plan. Yes, we basically eliminated pre-existing conditions. You can go out and buy some insurance now in high-risk pools. But the big step is going to be when we cover 30 million people who currently don't have health insurance, and that's going to take at least 3 more years. You just don't feel the impact yet.
Was there any way to up that? I know that was being discussed during the negotiations for the bill.
You mean do it faster?
Yeah.
It's just a money question.
Really?
It's a question of how you could pay for it. It was not as much a technical question as it was just a straight money question. You've got to accumulate the money to be able to do that.
You wrote a piece in the Miami Herald recently talking about when President Clinton dispatched you when you were Secretary of Health and Human Services in 1993 to advocate for universal health care in Detroit. Could you remember that time for us, please, and why this has been such a difficult thing to even talk about in this country?
Well, actually, I went off to a meeting of small business people and arguing that it was in their interest to have all of their employees covered. And a woman stood up, and they were giving me a very hard time, and said her employees had health insurance. And she didn't understand why she had to be involved in a government program. And I said, well, you don't. If you're providing health insurance to your employees, that's great. And she said, no, I'm not providing it. All of my employees are spouses of people that work in the auto industry. Which is exactly what has happened in this country, cost shifting. If you're a government employee in Wisconsin, you get your health insurance through the state government, and if your spouse works for a small business or a business that doesn't provide or is self-insured, has to be self-insured, you can cover that person. That means that we're all picking up each other's health insurance. And the other thing that happens, of course, is that everybody that enters a hospital who is not insured, those costs are shifted onto those that are insured. So my argument is it's in everybody's interest for everybody to have insurance. The president made a decision that it would be provided through the private sector. Those that couldn't afford it would get some subsidies. Very straightforward.
Mm-hmm. You also reference a couple presidents from years ago and say that FDR died regretting that he failed to establish a national health insurance plan and that Truman couldn't overcome the opponents who resurrected dire warnings against socialized medicine.
Both of them fought for universal health care, and it wasn't until LBJ when we actually got seniors covered. The fact is that the private sector has not been able to provide health insurance to everybody because of the affordability issue. And so the government has stepped up and said, for those that can't afford it, we'll provide some subsidies, but we're all in this together.
President Donna Shalala is our guest this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls for him. We're talking politics, we're talking health care, and we have yet to talk about education, which we will in a moment. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our lines are all filled, so just keep trying, and We hope you'll get through, and you will eventually. 800-486-8655. We've also made this a pledge-free hour, but it doesn't mean you can't pledge. It's just that we have more time for conversation with President Shalala. But if you'd like to pledge, that would be A-OK. 888-202-2552 is our pledge number, or WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, Robert Coles will be with us. I've delved into his new book over the weekend, and it is just, it's wonderful. Handing One Another Along is the name of the book, Literature and Social Reflection. He, of course, is the author of The Moral Intelligence of Children and the Spiritual Life of Children. He won the Pulitzer for his five-volume work, Children of Crisis. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And he is the Emeritus James Agee Professor of Social Ethics at Harvard University. He's a psychiatrist, and he's also a great lover of literature that helps give your life meaning. Should be a great interview tomorrow in this time period. All right, President Donna Shalala is our guest this hour. We start our calls with Bruce from Algoma. Hello, Bruce.
Good morning. I cheered, this is Shalala, I cheered your appointment to the Clinton cabinet. One of the things that wasn't mentioned at the start of this program is your role with United Healthcare as a director. I'd like to ask you what your role was when Mr. McGuire back in like 2004 got $1 billion severance.
Well, first of all, I played a role. I didn't go onto the board I wasn't on the board when Mr. McGuire did what he was accused of doing, but I did play a role in his leaving the board after it was discovered and properly researched by the board. And I'm no longer a member, director of that of United Healthcare.
We go next to Bob in Verona. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Kathleen and
Hi, Bob.
Donna.
Yes.
I'm a registered nurse, and I'd like to congratulate you on your award for the urging a bigger role for nurses. It's amazing how things don't change. 37 years ago, when I was in graduate school, I researched and supported a project for expanding the role of pediatric nurse practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I did want to move to something broader. I'm one of the belief that all things are political, and we're in the political season. And, I'm interested in the Democrats and Obama in terms of, they've been accused of negative campaigning. And my feeling is that Obama was elected with a broad mandate for change in all areas. You know, our institutions are failing in education, government, corporations, media, healthcare, and what the biggest failing is that all those institutions are not delivering for the common good. And so really Obama's mission was to take on the establishment. And I guess I feel that if he's erred, it's by not doing that aggressively enough. And I think at this point he realizes it. And I guess I would hearken back to when FDR was talking about the bankers. When he was criticized, he said, "I welcome their hatred." And I'd like to ask you, considering what I've said, what do you think Obama and the Democrats should do in trying to tell their story and overcome the masterful big lies that the Republicans are so good at perpetuating?
You know, I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. I would say that that in healthcare, the president has taken a giant step, as significant as the movement to Medicare or the step to put Social Security in place. But it's been lost because the economy has been so bad, and all the moves have been on the economy. But in healthcare alone, and I wish it could have been bipartisan, there's been a giant step. that giant step will make a difference in everybody's lives, because we're moving to a point where everybody's going to have health insurance. Now we have to make sure it's a quality system and that it's affordable for everybody. And I think that's the great challenge for those of us in the healthcare business.
Mm-hmm. It still is such a complicated business, isn't it, President Shalala?
Yeah, because we don't have a single-payer system. Not
right.
that I'm advocating for it. I've never been able to figure out that politics. We keep the private system. We build on it. We give people lots of choices, or some choices, in terms of how they want their health care delivered. We certainly try to give them some choices in who they get to go to, depending on where they live in the country. So. And we pay according to what the physician or the nurse what they do for you. So it's a very complicated system. It's a complicated payment system. It's organized in a complicated way. It's hard to make it seamless. And those are the challenges for the future.
Let's go to Paul from Presque Isle. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hello, Paul. Go right ahead.
Hi, Mrs. Shalala. I actually met you once with Niles and Linda. Friends of ours.
Yes, my neighbors.
Yes. question for you. My daughter is a 27-year-old returning to school person, currently going to UW Milwaukee for an advanced nursing degree.
Mm-hmm.
And, 6 months ago it came out that to be a nurse practitioner, which was her dream, would now require a PhD versus a master's, which basically now is going to limit her at her age to being something she probably didn't want to be without going back to school. So I'm curious as to what your stance is on the level of degree for a nurse practitioner. And then a secondary question. I think the Democrats are doing a terrible job selling health care during this election time. It's brutal up here in the North Woods. Every Democrat is penned as being the person that's responsible for this government program that's being forced on the general population. Why isn't the Obama administration doing a better job of selling health care?
I don't know the answer to that question. What I can say is that I consider it pretty straightforward. We have 30-plus Americans without health insurance. In 3 years, they'll be able to buy health insurance. If they can't completely afford it, there will be some subsidies available. And we're going to eliminate pre-existing conditions, as well as make sure that parents can keep their young people on their health insurance until they're 26. Then there are some market reforms. I think people's big concerns about health care are mostly focused on what's happening to their own health insurance. It's getting more and more expensive, and that will continue until we organize it in a much more efficient way. As for your daughter, let me answer that very quickly. It's actually not a PhD. The master's degree for advanced practice nursing is moving to a doctor of nursing practice, the DNP degree, which will have some additional training, but it's not a PhD. It's not a research degree. It is an advanced practice degree. And for a variety of reasons, that degree is moving to a doctorate. In much the same way the physical therapy has moved to a doctorate. When you go for a degree in physical therapy now, you add 3 more years onto your bachelor's, 3 or 4 more years onto your bachelor's degree, and you get a doctorate.
Can you talk a little bit more, when you talked about our own health insurance, and people are complaining about this becoming more expensive, some are saying it's because of health care reform. When you said until we organize...
It has no connection to health care reform.
Okay, talk about that, but also when you said until we organize it better, what do you mean by that?
Well, right now we pay on the basis of procedures. That is, it's a fee-for-service system. With some exceptions, and many of those, some of those exceptions are in Wisconsin, where you have some managed care organizations. But basically, we've got a very expensive system. It's organized, focused on specialists. It's not as patient-centered. It doesn't have as much primary care and prevention care in it. Very different from the rest of the world, who have less specialists and more focus on general health care and on prevention. So we have put all of our resources, a lot of our resources, into specialties, And for that reason, it's made our system very expensive, but so has technology. The joke is Americans want the best healthcare system in the world, but they don't want to pay for it. Technology, the cost of medical devices, the cost of drugs, but our system is organized in a very inefficient way, in which the most expensive parts of the system are not the primary care and the prevention parts, but once you start bouncing around from specialist to specialist, very little coordination in the system, which is a direct role for nursing and for other healthcare professionals. We need a better coordinated care so people don't bounce from specialist to specialist, so they have a medical home and someone is actually getting them to the right place at the right time. And for those that don't have health insurance, they're going to the system very late, which means they're sicker. And it's more expensive, and those costs are shifted onto us. So it's a very fragmented system. When I went and looked at the federal system, which was essentially the one for the military and for the VA does a much better job using nurses providing integrated care. The VA has reformed itself. Some people have described it as a very socialistic system because there are no bills there. There are some copays for people that aren't completely eligible for all the services, but essentially, it's a very integrated system that relies heavily on nurse practitioners and on people with bachelor's degrees in nursing.
Mm-hmm. I know you've please spend at least a few moments on this. You've done a great deal of work looking at the medical care available for those who are returning from Iraq and from Afghanistan. They are facing brain injuries, terrible traumas, post-traumatic stress, of course, but a lot of injuries that will require different lives for them and quite a bit of medical care. Are we up to that task?
Oh, I think we are. We have already moved to better coordination of care. I think the mental health issues are ones that we've always been challenged by in the United States. We don't have a fully integrated, fabulous mental health system. We haven't put the investment in that part of the health system. Our returning soldiers remind us, these wounded warriors remind us that we need to make better investments in mental health as well. These traumatic brain injuries require a lot of care, as does post-traumatic stress injury. And it's a perfect illustration about how our fragmented healthcare system needs to be better integrated to provide this kind of care. Some of it shows up later and requires real care, and we've got to be able to do it as well in communities when these young people, these wounded warriors, return, as well as in our VA system and in the military hospitals around the world.
Let's go to Ryan in Milwaukee. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I'm a 24-year-old recent college grad, and I just started a business. And I have a couple other friends that have also started businesses, and one of our biggest concerns is we're paying all these taxes, we're paying out all these other insurances for having these businesses, and none of us have health insurance. Mm-hmm. We can't afford it. And so one of my questions is, what kind of resources can we go to for finding affordable health insurance? Because, you know, last year I cut my finger and I had to go into the hospital, and it was non-life threatening. And I got 12 stitches.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was very expensive.
Yeah, it was extremely expensive.
Yeah.
I actually was more concerned about the cost than my finger.
Mm-hmm. So where does he go to find
that? That's the challenge. Unless you go to a public health clinic, you're going to pay through the nose if you go to a hospital. The most expensive part of the healthcare system to go to get something like that done is actually a hospital. And if he needed stitches, he may have to go to a hospital as opposed to an urgent care center. For young people just starting out who are over 26 and are just starting their businesses, that group, that working group, is exactly what the new healthcare bill will deal with, because it'll take into account their income and provide them with comprehensive insurance. Right now, if you go into the market, all you're going to be able to find that you could afford is a very high deductible. That doesn't handle your finger cut, because you end up paying for that out of pocket. But in the new health care plan, Wisconsin will provide some options for you, and you'll be able to choose among plans and figure out what's the best for you. But right now, if you had to go directly into the market, it would be very difficult to find a plan that didn't have a high deductible that would be affordable for you. But unless we spread your risks, you're actually probably quite healthy because you're young. Unless everybody pays into the system, we can't provide health insurance for you or for a family that's low-income workers, because we've got to spread the risk over a larger and larger number of people. So I think the new health care bill will actually help you. If you were under 26, you could have stayed on a family plan, and you would have been covered. But we're going to end up with a program, if we don't do this, that's very high deductible, that has you paying out of pocket when something like that happens to you.
Well, he said he was 24. Could he still, even though he's running?
Yes, he could get on his parents' plan right now.
Okay, go do it.
Right now.
Yeah,
if you're
Ryan.
24 and your parents have health insurance, their insurance plan is required to cover you.
Yeah.
Even if you're out working and you're out of school.
Thanks, Ryan, very much for the call. Let's go to Bill in Sun Prairie. Hello, Bill.
Yes. Hello, Dr. Shalala, and glad to talk with you. I tried to get in last hour with the same point of view, but I think it applies to health care. It applies to all the negative things about government that we hear from people. In the 30s, during the Roosevelt administration, they built a great trust with people in government. That started to erode away in the 60s and under the Nixon administration and all the things that went on there, the Johnson administration with the war, and then with Ronald Reagan and his rhetoric about distrust of government, and also his Iran-Contra affair, and then George Bush with his fear-mongering. It's my belief that it's created a high distrust of government among a lot of people, primarily independent voters, and all the Republicans really need to do was to go out and talk about government and their failures, their shortcomings, this sort of thing. And on the other hand, in 2008, I think President Obama won on purely on the idea of providing hope for the future and hope in government. And because that didn't become instantly achieved, and the Republicans are now out talking about big government and healthcare takeover by government and the failure of government, that's where the public's at right now.
You know, thank you for your comments, and I won't go beyond making a simple point, and that is that there is a stream in American history that's really anti-government since Jefferson. So we've always had this. It pops up, you know, periodically. Roosevelt was very shrewd. He picked out programs in which the private sector didn't want to play. Johnson did the same thing. There's no evidence the private sector was prepared to take care of Social Security. Or in the case of Johnson, the private sector was not about to provide adequate health insurance for people over 65. In the same way, I would argue the president, we've waited a long time for the private sector to provide insurance for millions of Americans that don't have insurance. It's very clear that they can't figure out a way to provide affordable insurance for this group, or they would have done it. Therefore, there's an opening for government, if government considers it a priority, to step up and say, okay, private sector, we'll buy insurance from you, we'll provide subsidies, but you have to provide this insurance package at a reasonable cost, and we're prepared to subsidize it. That's all the Obama plan does. It keeps with the private sector. It doesn't run the health care plan. It provides guidance to make sure it's comprehensive, and then it provides some subsidies. But again, we waited a long time for the private sector to step up for this particular group. They're all working Americans. They're just low-income working Americans that don't have health insurance, and young people. And we've said as a country, this is important to do, or the rest of us are going to have to pay for it. So that's about where we are.
President Donna Shalala is our guest this hour. She is the former, of course, U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. She served during the entire Clinton administration. She, we want to ask her about food safety, too, because she did a great deal when it came to FDA's drug approval process and food safety system. We've had some real problems, as you know, with eggs lately. Where are our problem areas when it comes to food safety? We'll talk to her about that. She is, of course, the former chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is now president of University of Miami. She was one of the country's first Peace Corps volunteers, and she's with us this hour to talk about health and human services, really. Our phone number, we have one line open, 800-486-8655. And to give you a full discussion, we decided to go pledge-free in terms of spending some time asking for your donations, but you can still pledge this hour. We're just giving you more conversation. The pledge number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. President Donna Shalala, our guest, Bill in Milwaukee. Hello.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, Ms. Shalala. Personally, I think the American medical care system is the worst example in the world of what I would call monopoly capitalism. I mean, this is a kind of style of economy that I think was very common maybe in the late 1890s. I think that by having a federal takeover of this system, that we're simply going to cement in concrete all of these economic inefficiencies across the board. Let's not forget the AMA, the American Medical Association, is the most powerful labor union in the world. They spend something like $330 million on a typical presidential election campaign. By cementing this inefficient system in concrete, you know, by this federal law, I think that this program is going to bankrupt the federal government.
We keep hearing this federal takeover. We've got a federal takeover. It seems to me as though it's anything but a federal takeover.
No, in fact, it's the opposite, because it basically uses the private sector to create the health plans, and then uses the states to administer the organization that's going to deliver those health care plans. So the federal government actually did the opposite. Now, there is some federal guidance. It has to do with making sure the plans are comprehensive enough so they're real health care plans. But basically, they moved in the opposite direction, didn't touch people's existing private health care plans other than to say to them that your plans are now going to cover your kids up to 26. So I don't see it as a federal takeover at all.
And let's go next to Debbie in Eau Claire. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Dr. Shalala.
Hi,
I'm
Debbie.
I'm a bachelor's student from Eau Claire, and I guess one of my issues is with healthcare literacy. I work at a hospital, and some of the issues that kind of throw me off is that people don't know how to use the system to be more cost-effective, and there's really not a lot of gatekeepers out there. I was just wondering if you had any insight as to how we could inform people a little bit better, make them utilize their resources a little bit better, like that gentleman that called in and said he went to the emergency room, which is the most, you know, most costly thing to go about. That way, I guess my issue is that working as a nurse in a hospital setting, I try and inform patients what their choices are, what their options are, to try and guide them. And if you feel that this is a primary care type of issue where they can kind of direct them, or I guess I just was wondering what your insight was on that.
You know, I think that we're going to need health literacy at every level. Right now, people often go online to get information about healthcare. And we're going to have to do it every place where we work. We're going to have to take more responsibility for our own to get the information. I had an ankle injury a couple of years ago, and I went to see the specialist, and he recommended an MRI. And I said to him, wouldn't an X-ray do? And he said, well, yes. He said, but no one's ever said to me they wanted an X-ray instead of an MRI. Well, I happen to know precisely the difference in price between the two. I think I left him sort of flabbergasted. But the fact is, we have to give people more information. Some people believe if they have to pay for more of the health care themselves, they would behave differently. That may be true of some people, but I think all of us have to take more responsibility for getting the information and getting accurate information and understanding where we should go, or none of us are going to be able to afford health care. That's the point of my story about the small business that was getting their workers covered by the auto industry because their spouses were working in the auto industry. We're cost shifting. We have to pay for people that don't have insurance. People may think it's their fundamental right, but if they get into trouble, they're going to go to a place where they can get it at a reasonable cost, and the rest of us are going to have to pay for that.
Thank you very much, Debbie.
You're welcome. Thanks for your service.
Thanks for calling. Let's go next to Dave in Mequon. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Hi there. I'm calling in regards to the children being covered to age 26. Mm-hmm. And I had that situation afforded to me. But when I checked into the tax obligation that comes along with it, it then became unaffordable. You can comment. I'll take the comment off the air.
Wait, let's be more specific. It was for you? It was for your child?
It was actually for my son.
Uh-huh.
And the tax obligation that was going to be incurred by accepting the health care was unaffordable.
The tax obligation from where was it coming from? I'm confused.
From the premium cost. Because what I was told, and maybe I'm wrong, is that they take the premium cost and then give you a 1099 at the end of the year, and you're obligated to pay taxes on that free health care.
This must be a part of your own employer's insurance plan. Most young people are being covered under these plans at very nominal cost. Because they are young and they are healthy, I'm surprised that there are huge tax implications for you. Because most of us, and we're the largest employer in South Florida, are assuming, in our case, probably 500 people we wouldn't ordinarily cover at a very nominal cost because they're quite healthy. So I would go back and ask them again what they're talking about and what the actual cost is, because the cost of not having insurance if something happens may be phenomenal. The other thing is whether these young people, particularly if they go into the workforce, will be able to buy into these new plans in 3 and 4 years, because there will be plans available to young people. Unfortunately, some of them may be high deductible, which is what student insurance is essentially in this country. But I would go back and check, because we certainly are covering people at a very nominal cost here.
Mm-hmm. Certainly worth checking. Before we go back to phone calls, I wanted to ask you briefly, although this could be an hour in itself, I know that you did reforms of the FDA's drug approval process and also food safety system when you were Secretary of Health and Human Services. We keep getting these outbreaks. The latest you know was eggs from a couple farms in Iowa, large farms. A lot of people, you know, we eat eggs and everything. We eat eggs. We eat eggs for breakfast. What are we not doing that we need to be doing to make sure this food supply is safe?
Another example of fragmentation. The problem is that the FDA has some jurisdiction without the level of funding and staffing that it needs. And the Department of Agriculture has other jurisdiction, and we need to rationalize the food safety system. I mean, we had good coordination with ag when I was in the government, but it's not good enough. And we need to rationalize the food safety system so that we know who's responsible, can hold them accountable, and that they have the resources they need to actually supervise the system.
Mm-hmm. We let this go on for too long, don't we?
Yes, we have. And, you know, some of that's turf battles.
Right.
But the committees of Congress just need to get their act together and pull together a system that looks like a system. And having two government agencies with the responsibility
right.
is just very difficult.
Do you worry about the size of some of these farms?
You know what? I don't think that that's an issue in safety. I think it's whether they have the safety system in place and whether it's properly checked on.
And it doesn't seem
and
to be.
And they're held accountable.
Checked on, yeah. Leah is our next caller from Milwaukee. Hi, Leah.
Hey. My husband belongs to one of the large construction labor unions in Wisconsin, and our kids are in their early 20s and work part-time and can only go to college part-time. As they need to pay for school themselves, we can't afford to pay for them. And I find it very ironic that this union, who spends so much money on Democratic agendas, is actually exempt from these new laws, including the ones which would allow my kids to stay on our policy through 26. Are you aware of that, Ms. Shalala?
No, I'm not. My assumption, are you a part-time worker?
No, my husband works full-time, and my kids were covered under his family policy until they were no longer full-time college students.
Mm. Yeah, but that law has been eliminated. The insurance now, whether they're full-time or part-time, doesn't have anything to do with whether they're a college student. It covers them until they're 26.
Well, please check it out because the union is telling me they're exempt from this. Their original rules remain, and my kids are not allowed to be covered. Something about them being not a public, like, you know, UnitedHealthcare, they fund themselves, but that's not our option. This is what's offered to us. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
I go back and check. Yeah. And I check the rules really cover employers that we're all supposed to cover people up to 26. I don't know that specific situation.
Thanks, Leah, very much. Again, pointing a need for things to be a little simpler. It gets so darn complicated. Do you miss Wisconsin?
I do. You always miss Wisconsin, particularly in the fall. I'm
right.
going to be out there this weekend, actually, because I'm giving the endowed lecture, the Littlefield lecture at the nursing, at the College of Nursing at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Oh, I see this. Yeah, October 15th.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
So I'm going to stick around for the weekend and visit friends.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's as lovely as it was last weekend or this past weekend. Oh, did we have a beauty? We had a beauty. A day to remember. Let's go next to, let's see. Robin is our next caller from Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Robin.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
My question is about health care. And the argument against single payer is that we can't afford it, but one thing that I've never heard discussed is how much do we spend a year in this country on health care and insurance premiums, and in relationship to that amount, why they tell us that we can't have single payer because we can't afford it?
You know, it's a straight political question. I don't know the answer to that other than those who believe in single payer have not been able to put together the politics. We do spend a lot of money on health care, more than any other country in the world, but we've never been able to, no one has ever been able to put together the politics for a single-payer system.
It's very hard in this country to do so, isn't it?
Very hard to do.
Even though many other countries have it. President Shalala, thank you ever so much for being with us.
And you're welcome.
Entertaining.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you. A variety of subjects. And we do want to remind you, I want to tell you a little more about her appearance on Friday. I almost forgot about that until she reminded me. She will be speaking at the Wisconsin Union Theater this coming Friday, October 15th. The program begins at 9 a.m., and she's going to be talking about what are the solutions to the continuing challenges facing the nursing profession, and how do we improve quality and transform the way Americans receive health care. The admission to the lecture is free this Friday, but you do need a ticket. So for further information, call the Wisconsin Union Theater box office so you can get yourself a ticket. That number is 608-265-2787. And it's a topic that's of profound interest to many of you who are listening, I know, and you may want to attend her lecture, free lecture, on Friday in Madison. We had a pledge-free hour, pretty much, but it doesn't mean that we're not pledging. If you like every now and then being able to have an hour like this, I hope you will consider calling now with a pledge of support to this program. Our number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. And if we get a pretty good response, we may be able to throw in, you know, a couple of these pledge-free hours during our show, during future pledge drives. WPR.org is the other way that you can pledge. And we appreciate it deeply. Thanks to President Donna Shalala for being with us, and to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease for production on the hour, and thanks to all of you for calling with your interesting health issues. We'll be with you again tomorrow from 9 to 11 with some great guests. Thank you.